All right. Welcome to the Sell by Being Human podcast. I'm your host, Alex Smith. And this is the podcast where we learn from people in all walks of life who sell things through the lens of human connection. I think we can learn human skills from people all around us. This is the place where I'll bring the very best of those people together. And I have one of those people here today, someone that has spoken to some of our guests in the past on previous podcasts. Great to be connected to this guy. Really has some great information to share around the skills of sales, the mentality, bringing your faith into sales. You don't hear a lot of people talking about faith in sales, and we're going to go there today. But this guy, is currently a senior regional sales manager at Boston Scientific, but he also has an awesome book that is new that he came out with. Called Relentless Sales, and I'll have him talk a little bit about more about that book. So he's an author. He's been a sales practitioner most of his career, and now he's a sales leader. I am so excited to welcome none other than John Alwinson to the podcast. Welcome, John.
Thanks, Alex. So good to be with you, man.
All right. I mentioned you have a book. What you know really kind of intrigued me about your book, and I know we were kind of talking, and we're kind of in the same lanes of people. You talked to some of our previous guests, Lara Levine and Daryl Amy, and their podcast, Selling from the Heart, is one of my favorites. And we talk a lot about we swap guests a lot of times, and They were great. Larry is a great guest here. But you know what, John, it's really interesting to me how you blended those three things together, because I think there's a lot of skills that aren't talked about enough in sales. There's a lot of frameworks. There's a lot of technical skills. But I'm super interested in I call them human skills. Some people call them soft skills, but they're the individual skills that are maybe harder to access for people. I think we all have them. They're all unique to us. And you bring it with. Skills, mentality, and faith that we'll get into with your book. But I always ask people this question in the beginning, John. If I say the term, and you heard the name of the podcast before joining. So when I say the term sell something and sell it by being human, what does that mean? And what do you think about when I say that phrase to you?
Yeah, I think of just being your genuine, authentic self is what I think of. And we're all in sales. And so whether you're an engineer trying to sell your project internally to the organization you work for, or you're a husband and wife debating on what's for dinner and who's going to win that argument, right? Whatever industry you're in, we're all in sales, regardless of your title is sales or not. And so I think of it just being your genuine self and putting relationships at the forefront of that.
Yeah. And I've had very, very similar answers for you. How have you been able to find that through your career? And maybe, who's helped you access your genuine self throughout your life? Because I find it's the trendy thing to say, be authentic, authenticity sells and all of that. And it's harder for people to actually unlock it in themselves. And we a lot of times need the help of other people to access it. So how have you accessed it and who's helped you, find that in your life?
Yeah. And so chapter one of my book, I talk about mentors. And so most sales books don't start with mentors. And so I go from chapter one mentors to chapter two identity. And I find that's so important before you even start the sales process to have a good network around you. And then honestly, to know who you are as a person and live from that true identity. And so mentors, we talk about that in chapter one. I've been very fortunate. My dad is one of my biggest mentors. And he was a pastor growing up. And so he didn't know a thing about business, didn't know a thing about sales, would always connect me with people who did. And so growing up, there'd be times where he'd say, "Hey, Johnny, there's a guy over there. I have no idea what he does. I know he's very successful in business. Go see if you can grab coffee with that person. And if you can, I'll pay for it." And so that I grew up in an environment where my dad was trying to be helpful, was trying to help form me, and was just so fortunate to have a group of mentors around me to kind of help guide my way through this tough world.
I love it. Do you, what do you think your dad did really, really well as a pastor? Like when you think about like watching him as a kid, I'm sure you were probably just like amazed, like having somebody that like, you know, central in the community. I mean, you know, if you're a pastor, you're, I'm sure he wasn't me. I don't know if pastors are easy on kids. I imagine they're not the easiest, you know, sometimes they're kind of, you know, very traditionalist, but, yeah, tell me like what you observed him do. Like, what do you think he was like really good at, you know, growing up with when it comes to people?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is he is a people person. So we call it sanguine, right? So we, you know, he's a high sanguine people person. And so he did genuinely just like to be around others. As a pastor, he was just a very dynamic communicator. So he still to this day is preaching, speaking in the Orlando market. He's a phenomenal communicator. But I think really at the heart of it is he genuinely cared about people and really wanted to help bring out the most in them. And kind of now is doing men's ministry in Florida. And so he's kind of focused his niche on developing men and helping them to be better leaders in their household and in the community in general.
Love it. Yeah, I mean, like... tell me a little bit about, like, I know, you know, we look at church, you know, we look at ministers and pastors and say, hey, these people aren't in sales, but certainly they're bringing people into a church and a religion, not in a, like a forceful way and in a pushy way, at least the good ones aren't, like, do you remember like things where, you know, like, I don't know, you saw like, you know, kind of like churchgoers kind of continued to go, or maybe even like new. I love like the dynamic of the new churchgoer, you know, they don't know what they're like. They're nervous. It's totally new. I mean, it's really, you know, intimidating, you know, as a new person to walk into a church, you know, where you don't know anybody. Everyone knows each other. It's a whole religion you're maybe not, you know, totally aware of, and you don't want to be, you know, religions are really personal things. So, you know, how would he make people feel welcome and home?
You know, yeah. So it was funny. We always got to be part of the pre-call plan for his sermon. So, you know, the week before, during the week, I'm thinking about telling this joke, you know? And so he'd have these little jokes to, you know, and so half of them were awful. And we were like, Dad, that's terrible. Don't say that, you know? And some were good. But when he found, you know, the one or two for the sermon, he would really try to bring humor and laughter into the sermon to lighten the mood. And I think that helps people be more receptive. And so he would always do a great job. He was also very energetic on stage. So he would really work the stage. So he'd be walking left to right, looking people in the eye and really just trying to connect with the audience. And so I think those two things, adding some humor, adding some, you know, getting the crowd laughing always does a good job of warming them up.
Yeah, I love it. Well, yeah. Tell me early on, like I was kind of like a couple things that I really liked. And, you know, you said one of the first things you learned a lot about just like your own style and, you know, kind of just the beginnings of sales just by, you know, almost like, you know, really like failing like at an early age, being at a company and, you know, having a really awesome product, like selling, you know, in a retail environment, selling clothing, footwear, things like that. But just, you know, just being young and just being, you know, starting out as entrepreneurs, not having the same resources as some of the larger brands and things like that out there. So tell me what that, you know, kind of like what some of your early experiences just out of college, like, and maybe even if there's earlier than that, like what did some of your earliest experiences teach you, you know, about sales?
Yeah. So the earliest experience started when my brother and I were, you know, call it 9 and 11, walking around our neighborhood, knocking on doors, seeing if we can mow other people's grass for money. And so we actually had a lawn company growing up, and my brother is a serial entrepreneur. And so we grew up in an environment where we weren't poor, but we certainly weren't rich. And so we wanted something, we had to go work for it. And so we started mowing lawns, and that lasted through high school. And then during college, that's when my older brother and I started a footwear outdoor company. And so we started manufacturing footwear in China. We would co-brand it. We would also had our own private label line. And then we raised capital and we started selling it throughout the US, my first, you know, call it five plus years in business. And so, man, it was an eye opener. I learned so much, but I think ultimately there's so many lessons that we learn from kind of just overlapping job responsibilities to just poor sales rollout, myself being guilty of that, fear of talking to buyers and purchasers when there really shouldn't have been fear to begin with. And just the unknown of maybe releasing new design styles to the market before we were even ready. And I think that's ultimately what hurt us, is we released our designs and kind of proprietary stuff. And then other brands saw that, took it, and they already had those direct relationships with the big box chains and buyers. And so we learned a lot the hard way, we talk about in the book. But those lessons did develop the grit and wisdom that we have now.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. It seems so wild to me. Like, I am somebody from, you know, at a young age, it went knocking on doors. I say on LinkedIn, like, my first sales experience was selling ham and cheese for the Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts, like door to door, just like a catalog back in the catalog days. Like, you hand someone a catalog and try to sell them some random process, you know, I don't know, cheese log or something like that, and make them make money. But you were going, yeah, just knocking on doors. But, you know, doing that, something like selling like a product and manufacturing it in China and just having the know-how or just the confidence and the, you know, just like the chutzpah, I guess, to like do that is wild to me. It seems like totally illogical that two young kids could even get that far to begin with, let alone like, you know, not continuing. I think that's a huge success. When you think about that, if you could give yourself advice, like if you could talk to yourself from, you know, a couple, like that version of yourself you said, like that was maybe afraid, like maybe there's other things, like any advice you'd give to your younger self, yourself or your other co-founder that you did it with, hopefully, you know, add some wisdom.
I do think, you know, obviously the book is not to pitch my book, but the book really is the advice I would give to any young business person in sales, right? It's my personal playbook over the last 15 years. And so, I do think there's skills components, there's the mental toughness, and a lot of times that takes time to build, but if you're aware of it, you can get ahead of it. And then the faith piece is the pillar of the trio. And I think not being afraid, right? If you're young and hungry and want to get your name out there or build whatever you're starting, I think the biggest thing is to conquer fear. And I talk about my strategy for that in chapter 9 of my book, but you know, just know you're not too young to do anything that you want to do. If there's something you want, you're not too young or you're not too old. And don't let fear cripple you, because fear really is a debilitating thing if you let it get a hold of you. And so that would be the number one piece of advice that I give people.
Let's talk about, I'm sure you do get into, like, and I love the, I've always loved, like you, the term relentless, and you kind of, you know, define it, and you go into, you know, it's, yeah, I think you're saying, like, showing or promising no abatement of severity, intensity, strength, or pace. You're unrelenting, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, you're going to keep going, you know? Sometimes people think, like, tenacious or whatever, but I think relentless just means, like, it's not just, like, you're you know, hungry in a temporary way. It's like, I'm going to keep going because I have my mind focus on this like greater, like, you know, outcome or task. And until that happens, like, I'm going to keep going. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about like, just in terms of like fear, like just to go back to that, like, what do you talk about? Do you talk about that in the book? Do you talk about like things that people can do? Cause it's very easy to say, just, you know, just take that away. Like everything you want is on the other side of fear and all of that. Yeah. But like the reality is the fear is still there. Like it wouldn't be important if we didn't. Fear is just a normal human characteristic. Like no one, is without fear, right? Like that's not possible. You can have courage in the face of it, but like how you know, how do you kind of coach and advise people? And I'm sure you work with a lot of younger sellers in your career to right now to do it. So what do you tell them to kind of focus on? How have you been able to maybe ease it in your career? Because it doesn't ever go away, but you know, you kind of walk alongside it.
Some of the real practical things I do with my team is, number one, I help them identify their strengths. So when you know what you're good at, you know how to play towards your strengths, right? And I love, you know, the Strengths Finders assessment. It tells your top five talents. And when you know what your top five talents are, you can double, triple down on those and be very successful. So so that's one of the things I talk about. So define what you're good at strength-wise. And then also, I think going back and looking in the rearview mirror temporarily and outline your wins over the course of your life. And it could be as anything of making a basketball team in middle school to scoring a winning touchdown to playing violin, right? Learning how to play violin, whatever it is for you, write down your list of past successes. And when you look at what I believe how God's wired you, your top five gifts, and then you look at all the things that you've been blessed with throughout your life, even if your life's been difficult, you can go back and look at some wins that you had over the course of your life. To me, that starts building confidence, right? And when you live from that confidence, you can be, and you put your customer first. That's one of the secrets of sales, is like, it's not about you. It's about helping others and finding you through helping others, how your service, solution, or product can really benefit them. And a lot of times if we just stop talking and ask our customer, tell me before we begin, I know we're here to talk about X, Y, and Z, but before we begin, will you tell me about yourself and really what's important to you this year? A lot of times that basic question can just open the keys to knowing if what you're offering makes sense or not. And so, you know, I'll stop there, but there's a ton of more examples I give throughout the book of how I think I can help people who are struggling or want to build that confidence.
Yeah. I really love that you frame it that way, that, well, number one, like, you know, we all have, there's the little wins, right? We sometimes put too much weight on what is a win, right? Like a win has to be a sale. It has to be something really super big, when a win could just be like, yeah, maybe something like an award that we got. Maybe it was something that we made as a kid. Maybe it was, you know, a great trip we went on. Maybe it was like, there's all these little wins that we don't spend enough time just focusing on. So writing them down, you know, like if you're not journaling, just write a couple of those things down, and they compound, you know, they don't ever, like we almost don't let them serve us now. It's like, okay, those were prior wins, you know, those can't serve me now, but they can mentally, like you know, yes, the win, what you got from that, you know, it could be a how, like it could be anything, great conversation. And those things like help you like just mentally reframe and just say, hey, like I've won a lot, you know, and I'm capable of winning, you know, like continuing to win. And one of the things that you said that really like struck me is like when you sell from a place of fear, like, oh man, I need this. Like if I don't have this, how many times in sales, John, have you said like, I need this sale? You know, I need this to close this quarter, this month, right? This year. Mm-hmm. Like we just, like we say it without even thinking about it. But like when you need something, like, you know, that's going to influence a lot of your actions, you know, of what you are willing to accept and do, as opposed to like, you know, I would love, like it would be great if, you know, that would be awesome. Like I've put myself in position to earn this, or I've done what it takes to say yes. And if it doesn't happen, there'll be another, you know?
That wears off on the customer too, right? Like that, if you are selling from that position,
right,
you're going to put that pressure, and their customers are, and they're going to feel that pressure you're putting on them, and they're going to react negatively to it. So yeah, at all costs, try to avoid putting that negative pressure. And a lot of times it's self-induced. We come up with these quotas and these things, right, where it causes us to feel that fear and react from it. But if we slow down, if we remember who we are and live from that identity, And then approach, you know, it's not just that. Like if we go into our meetings with good pre-call planning, on something I'm preaching a lot lately is most people say they pre-call plan. Very few actually put in the work to do that in preparation. They're watching Netflix or they're, you know, doing this, that, and the other before bed. And really the great salespeople will prepare in advance. And when you prepare, it eases that that nervousness, and it allows you to make for a more comfortable meeting with your customer.
Yeah, agreed. Tell me, like when did you realize like this was like a book? This was something you needed to, because this is new, and you can talk a little bit about relentless sales and kind of what made you write it. But you know, I'm always curious because a book is a lot. Like it is. I've even thought about it in my career, but you know, haven't done it. So it's not something you take lightly, and there's so much content out there. So why did you, you know, number one, why did you think like this is something that isn't being talked about and that I deserve to put this out? Like what can you, is it one thing? Is it a friend? Can you point to where you said this is something I need to actually do?
Yeah. So back in 2019, I've always kind of had a desire. I've been a book nerd. So from early days of John Maxwell to reading every book and sales book. And when I got into sales after we folded the business, I promised myself I wouldn't fail again. And I needed to be an expert in sales. And so what I did is I just started reading and reading and reading and reading. What I found is there are bits and pieces of books that really resonated with me. And so for the last 15 years, I consolidated that into really three categories: skills that you need to be successful in sales, the mental strength. And then the third piece, which is really kind of how I'm different from a lot of people, is I talk about faith in the book. I talk about how that's a competitive advantage. And so for years of just journaling in the morning, reading, reflecting in the morning, I put together some Word documents and I showed some friends, and one friend named Joe came to me and was like, "You need to tell yourself you're writing a book. This is great stuff," and really pushed me over the top to get going. So I think everybody needs a friend like Joe in their life that will encourage them, because I believe we all have a story, right, to write. Like everybody's got a book in them.
Wow. That's a lot. Like you need to tell yourself, because you're probably like, no, I'm just, you know, like jotting down stuff that I believe. And you know, if you were doing it to write a book, again, more pressure you're putting on yourself, a huge goal that would have maybe been harder to actually do, as opposed to, you know, just tell yourself that's what you're writing. And when it, you know, when you realize that you're good enough and like people are looking for it, and they're like giving you belief and transferring their belief in you, it kind of, I'm sure, like kind of flowed a little, maybe easier for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe a little. Yeah. Walk me through a little bit about like, what are some of those key skills? And I know, you know, what are like some of those, like, and maybe like a little of the mentality, and then how does faith, like, how does faith play into the other two? Cause maybe there's people out there that, you know, they're not churchgoers, they're not super religious, but maybe there is something there they can still have, even if they're not, you know, every Sunday, a day, a week churchgoer type person, right? So how do the three work together?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I would say I recently saw a podcast with Cat Williams and Joe Rogan, where Joe was like, "Hey, I think Joe is not a Christian, not a person of faith, but he's like, I do think there is something to this faith thing." So one of the most popular you know YouTuber podcasters, people in America, Joe Rogan, is even saying, "Hey, there is something to faith and how it can benefit you." But I do want people to know, your audience, that if faith isn't your thing, that's okay. You can still really benefit from the book as well. And so I do think there are fundamentals, like any sport, basketball, football, any musical instrument, there are skills that you need to learn and foundations. And when you master those basics, then you can level up your game from a skill perspective. So I would say in chapter 6 of the book, we talk about an elite sales process. So a lot of salespeople will not really have a defined process. They can't flip over a napkin at Starbucks with you when you're talking and bullet point their sales process. And where that hurts them is they're inconsistent as they're approaching customers. So I outline the process we use in chapter six, which I think is really, really helpful, from pre-call planning to finding pain with a customer to advancing and closing. There are multiple steps to a sales process, and you need to know that so you know where you stand in a conversation. And so I think sales process is key, as basic as it sounds. I think it's one of those things that some of the newer generation may be overlooking that they need to kind of pick back up, because it can really help them. So I do think that's one of them. The other thing I would say is be curious. And I think salespeople are very good. The good salespeople are very curious. And that curiosity, if you're bold enough, will allow you to ask good questions. And if you make it about your customer, those good questions can really help you move your process along to see if your solution, service, or product would be a good fit for them or not. So those are some of the things we talk about. And, you know, they're students of the game. I think they ask why a lot. And then, you know, they don't assume the skill. There's skill sets of just not assuming you know. You've got to have this foundation to where you're not walking into customer interactions from a skill perspective and thinking you're better than your customer, or thinking you know what the answer is to their problems, because that really turns them off. So there are foundations we talk about. And then obviously Relentless isn't the name of the book for no reason. I think we remain persistent. Now, that doesn't mean we bother customers or in their face or rude or step over the line, but if you find that you give up your persistency as a customer, I don't know if that's a word, but if you stop being persistent as a salesperson, that's where you really start to suffer. So that's the skills. Do you want me to touch on the mentality and faith a little bit as well?
Yeah. How do they work together? You know, how they bring the three together? Because, you know, I think, yeah, I agree. Like, once you have those foundational skills, as basic as they may seem, like, you don't need to have like complicated, you can really overthink sales, right?
Yeah.
But like, if like just a consistent process, I like the fact that you say, like, you know, just put it on a napkin. Tell me, what are the steps? I mean, yes, every customer is different, but if you don't know it that cold, then we just got to step back and kind of, you know, like, do that. So, yeah. You know, yeah. Tell me about how the mentality and faith work into, you know, the process that people build and the
skills. For sure. And so and a lot of the skills I teach are, they blend into the mentality side of things, right? Never giving up. You know, and so the mental side is reps throwing the towel too early. And I was just talking to a buddy down the street, and his daughter had been in sales for 1 year. And he said, nope, sales isn't right for her. She quit. And 1 year, she's just a baby. You know, she's just getting started in sales. And I'm like, that's why I wrote the book, is like, I want to help people like your daughter to understand it's a tough business. We're going to be told no a lot, right? And I think where they all blend is when you mix and you have a really good skill set and you have mental toughness, and that's bound with faith that can't be shaken, you're playing with a competitive edge. And so chapter two of my book is identity. And there was a point in time where, after the failed venture, I was an associate rep for 2 years. And so the first, call it 7.5-8 years of my career, was full of adversity. So when I finally had my chance, I went all out to be successful. And I was rookie of the year one, rep of the year two. And I was going for this founder's award for best 2 years combined. And my dad pulled me aside and is like, hey, son, like, go be excellent. Go for it. But if you don't reach that goal, like, you're an Allenson. You have what it takes. Like, live from your identity and who you are as God's kid, not for your identity. And so for me, that's where the faith piece, I think, for people who that really resonates with and people get, if they live from a perspective of victory and confidence before they even achieve what they want to achieve, it frees you up. It takes the pressure off, and it allows you to connect with your customers in a way where they see something different in you. Say, I don't know what it is about John, but I like him. He cares. He's always in here with a smile. and he's helping me and my team. And so to me, those three components I keep coming back to. You're skillful, if you're tough, and don't take the first no for finality, right? And then you have faith. That makes you likable, that leads to trust, and that leads you to connect with your customer like no other.
Yeah. It's when I'm hearing you talk, like I think to, you know, I think a lot with, there's like, let's call it like one level where, you know, someone is just, you know, looking at like, what do I have to do? What is the process? What are the skills I need in doing that? But they're not thinking like that person that was in it for a year. They're like, okay, if I know how to have a good discovery, if I know my product in and out and I know my customer, I'm doing all the research, I'm doing all these things, how am I still not successful? Well, because like you said, like the majority of people will tell you no, like not even you'll have like the totally right fit for someone. It's the right product. You've done everything right. But at the end of the day, like the buyer determines value. Like we can't determine that. We can only like try to uncover it and ask good questions and influence. But at the end of the day, like we're still going to say no to you when it's 100 times right and second guess and question ourselves. But if we have like we're strong mentally, we know, hey, it's not anything personally about me or my abilities or anything like that. We just let control of that. And that's like, we can let things roll off our back. That's another level. And then the third is more purpose driven. It's like, I like how you say, we're already achieving victory before the win, you know, because we're connected to like this higher, you know, power, higher, yeah. Purpose. And for you, that's faith. It could, for some people it's fishing, but, right. But that's still belief. It's something that's driving you underneath all of it. For you, like I see you connecting it a lot. It's not like one or the other. It's, mm-hmm. It's a part of everything you do. Right.
Yeah. It's a lot of people think that they need to be two different silos. I think who we are, that all blends together, right? Just like these three things, sales, mentality, and faith, it blends all together, right? When you put them all together, that's a successful formula with your customer at the forefront, right? Not you at the forefront, with your customer. And so you're exactly right. It's the blending of those things.
Yeah. let me ask you a kind of an interesting question. So like, you know, it's really easy to be connected to faith and God. And like, if you're, you know, religious, it's really easy to have those connections in a church, in a sanctuary, in a place where that's everyone's talking about those things, whether it's the Bible or anything. Right.
Sure.
So I've, you know, heard people say, well, don't mix, you know, religion and business or politics and business and things like that. But how do you bring in faith in your business walk, in your business conversations, without necessarily sometimes overly even mentioning, God or the Bible or anything like that? How does that show up for you, you think?
That's a great question. Yeah, great question. I think in many ways, I think being around people once a week where you're putting away work, it frees your mind up to kind of focus on a power bigger than yourself, right? So, but I get a lot of ideas from church. Mm-hmm. I mean, church and business, there are a lot of similarities. Management, leadership, you're leading a church, you're painting vision for that church, you're leading a sales team, you're painting vision for that sales team. And so quite honestly, I get so much material from our pastor. I go to Passion City Church here in Atlanta, love everything about it. But it's some of these pastors understand people way better than business leaders. And so I get so much knowledge from them, get fueled up for the week. And I learn a lot of things on how to interact and lead a team. And so we talk about everything else in this world. We're allowed to talk about faith, right? As long as it's done the right way, yeah. We talk about everything under the sun in business. But the one thing that's taboo is faith. We're allowed to talk about faith. And I want to encourage people to be genuine about that. You know, as long as we're not offending somebody or intentionally offending somebody, we can talk about it. And we can show how there's power in that and how it can help other people live more, more fruitful, effective lives.
Yeah. You know, like, and I'm glad you say that because I agree. I completely agree with you. Like, some people are probably afraid to maybe talk about it because they maybe don't want to offend someone that doesn't maybe think or believe the same way. Or like maybe they're afraid of like how they'll be perceived, like, oh, John or Mary or whoever is the, you know, they're going to push their faith on me or they're going to be, you know, I'm afraid of talking with them because they're going to go straight to faith. When in reality, like if that's something that, you know, is you, you know, why like shut that off from others? Because like many a times, like most people want people to feel comfortable. You know, they want you to feel like, you know, like they like vulnerable enough to like talk about something that really is important to you. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes, you know, people have to kind of go first, but I'm sure, John, how many times have you maybe talked about your faith and then somebody else on the team, you know, connects or brings it up and you had no idea, like they were maybe, you know, Christian or, you know, what their faith was, but then they were able to talk about their Jewish faith or their Hindu faith or, you know, but nobody brought it up and nobody felt it comfortable to do that. Has that happened to you ever? I imagine.
Yes. More often than not. We recently had a blending of teams where I had four new people on my team this year. So my sales team went from 6 to 10 and, you know, I had two of those 10 people pull me aside and say, hey, thanks for just being genuine and who you are. I've always thought I can't talk about having faith. And, you know, the fact that you allow that and you have an environment that's open-minded to that is encouraging. And so, yes, it happens all the time. It's not something, I mean, we're in business and we know what we need to do from a business perspective. But as people, I think we're created, people have a spiritual side. And I think you have to let them be their genuine selves because that plays a role in how they're living their professional life.
Yeah, 100% agree. Well, John, as we kind of get down to it, you know, I always ask people a fun question about them because like we talked a lot about today, like, you know, just being your genuine, authentic self in the very beginning. And we talked a lot about faith and how that's looked for you, you know, what your fathers, you know, kind of taught you throughout your life and family. But this is just a fun question about John, you know, that's going to be, you know, a genuine question about you. So John, you know, if I ask people that are close to you, like I know, like your wife and kids, like maybe your closest friends, maybe even your dad, like something that's like so totally John, you know, something that would only and could only happen to you or something that only you would do. What is something that they would say, you know what, that is just so totally John. That is something only he would do. What would they tell me, John?
You know, there's probably a lot. You'd probably get a lot of different answers on that. I've done something recently where, you know, I'm kind of the, when I'm at my perfect self, when I'm not focused on work and when I'm not focused on fitness or anything like that, when I'm just John, I really just love to have fun and cut up and laugh and gather people. And so I'm a gatherer. And so after 2020 happened, I text all the guys in my neighborhood and we had, you know, the George Floyd situation going on and we had all these different things going on. And I live in a very diverse neighborhood. And I just text all the guys and said, can we get together and can we just listen? Right. And what's so cool about that is we have a text thread of like 30 guys now in my neighborhood. It started with 5 to 10 guys. And now almost every guy in the neighborhood, I'm kind of the neighborhood cheerleader, if you will, or rah-rah guy where, I get the guys together once a quarter at least, and we have a fire pit in my backyard and we just get together and guys from all different backgrounds come together. And so, to me, that's the most fun time of the year is a few times, 3-4 times a year when I have all the guys in my neighborhood get together and we just fellowship and realize that, you know, our differences aren't really that big and we've got more similar than not. And so for me, genuinely, I'm kind of the hype man of the neighborhood. I was looking for words earlier. I'm the hype man of the neighborhood. So I'm always trying to encourage and
you are.
Gather our guys together.
That's amazing. I'm glad you used that word. I did a post the other day on LinkedIn. Like, who can you be a hype man for?
Oh, cool.
Because like I was just at a conference. It was an HR conference and I sell into HR. And that the end of the conference, they had, being from Florida, they had Flo Rida play
nice.
At the concert, which was pretty amazing in Las Vegas. And then they're like, who knows Flava Flav? And they brought out, it was his birthday, and they brought out Flava Flav to do a concert. And I'm like, you know what? He's the best hype man. He just hypes everyone up. And when I was there, he kind of taught me how to be a hype man. You're kind of bringing this story up. I'm seeing all these people on stage with them. There's a lot of people from the conference there. And instead of me just taking pictures of him and selfies of me, I'm like, you know what? These people on stage would love probably a hype man to take pictures and videos of them. So I just started focusing my camera on, you know, other conference goers on stage, because, you know, there's a celebrity on stage. I'm sure they love their pictures. And I made so many connections after that of people that are like, I can't believe you got that. Those pictures were epic. We should talk afterwards. And I'm like, you know what? I never even expected to do that. But, you know, kind of bringing it all around, always thinking about someone else, like what would someone else, you know, how could I be someone else's hype man in this moment?
Yeah.
You were for all those people in your neighborhood. So I'm glad you brought that story out, John. Thank you for that.
Thanks. Yeah, I love it. I love being around people. I love energizing,
John,
and connecting.
I you know, thank you for sharing it. You know, where can people like find out more about the book and you and stay connected to you, John?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So johnalwinson.com is my website. So J-O-N, my last name is Alwinson, just like it sounds. And, you know, would love to connect social media with any of your listeners. Would love to connect with them and become friends with them on social media. And then Amazon has our book, Relentless Sales. And so would be honored to you know, have any of your listeners pick up a copy, and would love to engage with them after they read it. You know, I love to hear people's thoughts after they read it. So grab a copy and then shoot me a DM and let's connect.
Yes, I highly recommend it. So we'll give you all the links and everything in the notes and everything and where you can find John. But John, thank you so much. Your gift, and I'm, you know, not enough people bring those three things together in the way you did. So congrats to you for you know, really distilling those things down in a way that we can access it. So thanks for coming on the podcast, and, you know, excited to see what's next for you. All right.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me, Alex.
Hey gang, this is Alex. Thank you so much for making it to the end. If you heard a quote you liked or got a little bit of value, drop me a line or a comment. It means the world to me. We have great human beings throughout all walks of life every single week who sell through the lens of human connection. And I'll see you on the next episode of Sell by Being Human. Thank you.